unto thee, O Lord. Do I lift up my soul unto thee, O Lord.
Do I lift up... Hello, you're listening to the In Search of God's Instructions podcast. I'm your host, Shirley Vinson, and every week I invite you to join me for support and encouragement on your journey to a deeper understanding of the spiritual way that God wants His children to live. We are all on the spiritual walk of life together. But no matter the storms that we face, if you search for His instructions, He will bring you through. Let's begin with the prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this opportunity to meet again to discuss your instructions for our lives. These times that we're living in are perilous times, and we know, Father, that the Messiah is soon to return to this world. When he first came into the world, he came into the world as a servant to teach us of the ways that we should walk in order to be a part of your kingdom. Now, when he returns, he will be returning as a judge to rule the world with righteousness and a rod of iron. Please be with us and bless us with wisdom, knowledge, understanding, and discernment as we seek out the truth, regardless of how painful that truth may be. Help us to remember that all things are designed by you and created by you to lift you up in praise, our one and true God. Walk with us, lead us, and guide us as we go along the way to find the truth of your instructions to apply to our lives. These things we ask and pray for in the name of Yehoshua, our Lord and our Savior. Amen. Today's podcast does not condone anti-Semitism, anti-Catholicism, racism, or any hatred against any person or particular group of people. As we study the scriptures that are written to us in the Bible that God has provided for us, keep in mind that we are seeking knowledge, we're seeking understanding, we're seeking discernment, and most of all, we are seeking truth. We're asking God to be with us and guide us in this. And as long as our hearts remain true to wanting to know the truth and the willingness to accept the truth, He will reveal His truths to us. Let us begin our study today in the book of Genesis, chapter 46. We begin at verse 2. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night, and said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not, go down into Egypt, for I will make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hands upon your eyes. And Jacob rose early from Beersheba. And the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. Chapter 47, verse 2. And he took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, What is your occupation? And they said to Pharaoh, Your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. Beginning at verse 5. Then Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know any competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my livestock. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, How old are you? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 137. Few years and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my father in the days of his pilgrimage. So Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. And Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Now move with me to verse 28. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 145 years. Now go with me to chapter 50, verse 22. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Now we're going to move into the book of Exodus. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Now move to Exodus chapter 1, beginning at verse 6. And Joseph died, all his brothers and all that generation. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Now there rose a new Pharaoh over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, "Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And it happen, in the event of war, that they also join our enemies and fight against us." The children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. As we continue to read the book of Exodus, beginning at chapter 3, we will see that God chose Moses and his brother Aaron to go before Pharaoh and say to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." As we study these words, we must keep something in mind here, because the question of this podcast is, I'm Hebrew Israelite. What does it mean? When we read the book of Genesis, just to get a brief history of what being Hebrew Israelite means, I chose to pick up in chapter 46 of the book of Genesis and read through to the book of Exodus, because there is a great history here. It's too much for me to read for the purpose of this podcast, so I'm going to give you a summation of it. First off, we see that Joseph was taken in to Egypt at the age of 17 years old. His brother sold him to the Ishmaelites. The Ishmaelites took him into Egypt, and they sold him to Potiphar, an Egyptian, who was in charge of the guard of Egypt. Joseph worked in Potiphar's house for a number of years until an event took place between Potiphar's wife and him, and he was falsely accused, and Potiphar had Joseph thrown into prison. While Joseph was in prison, he encountered Pharaoh's butler and his baker. Both the butler and the baker had a dream, and they were troubled by their dream, and God sent Joseph the interpretation of the dream. Joseph rightly interpreted the dream for them. And just as Joseph had interpreted the dream, that is exactly what took place. At the end, one was restored to his position and the other was not. And Joseph asked to be remembered before Pharaoh once the butler returned to his job. But the butler forgot about Joseph. Some years later, Pharaoh himself had a dream, and the butler remembered Joseph. He sent for Joseph to come and interpret Pharaoh's dream for him, and Joseph did so. When Joseph went before Pharaoh and interpreted the dream, Pharaoh was so impressed that he made Joseph the second ruler in all of the land of Egypt under him. Joseph was 30 years old when he became second in command of all of Egypt. And when he became second in command and took control of Egypt, it was during this time a great famine. First, the dream consisted of 7 years of plentiful food to eat and 7 years of extreme famine. God showed Joseph how he could save a lot of people by taking a particular plan of action to ensure that all of Egypt and the surrounding nations who was going to go through this famine survive through the famine. 7 years after Joseph became second in command to Pharaoh, his brothers, who had sold him into slavery, showed up in Egypt to buy food. They did not recognize Joseph, but Joseph recognized them. That first year, when they showed up, Joseph revealed himself to them and instructed them to go and get his father and get all of their children and their spouses. He instructed them all to move to Egypt so that he could look after them and help see them through the severe famine that was going to last for 7 years. And they did so. According to the instructions that's written in Exodus, 60 of them went into Egypt. And this included Israel himself, the father. Israel remained in Egypt for 17 years and then he died. Joseph and all of his siblings and their families remained in Egypt. And we see here the names of the people who came with his brothers when they came into Egypt. We see this in chapter 6, beginning at verse 16. The reason this is important is because Levi, being one of Joseph's brothers, brought with him into Egypt his sons. And his sons were named Gershon, Kehath, and Merari. And Levi lived until he was 137 years old, and he died. From there, of Levi's sons, we see Kohath. Kohath had a son named Amram, and the years in the life of Kohath were 133 years. Now, Amram, who was the son of Kohath, took for himself a wife, and Amram's wife bore to him the sons Aaron and Moses, and the years of Amram's life were 137 years. Then when we look at chapter 7 of the book of Exodus, we see at verse 7, and Moses was 80 years old and Aaron was 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. Meaning, when the children of Israel started to cry out to God because of all the labor that they were going through in Egypt, we see that God called up Moses and Aaron to speak to Pharaoh to say, "Let my people go." The amazing thing about this situation is that God already knew the time was coming when he would have to prove to the world at that time that he was the only true living God. Because remember, Pharaoh thought that he was God. Everybody worshiped Pharaoh as God. And so therefore Pharaoh thought that he had all power to command and do whatever he wanted to do on earth. And this included to command and treat the people of Israel however he desired to do so. When we look at this, we see that God showed lots of signs through Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh to get him to humble himself before God and let the people go. And that's the thing when we think about what does it mean to be a Hebrew Israelite, a child of God. Regardless of where you are or who you are, whether you're born into the family of Israel or not, God has always made one set of rules for all of mankind. There's always been one set of rules. He chose one particular group of people on the face of the earth to instruct everybody else about God's instructions of how we are to live on the earth. Because God himself does not come down and give us these instructions. And so therefore, he chose one group of people, human flesh on earth, to be a guiding light with those instructions for anybody else who want to come and worship him, because he does not force himself on us. He gives us free will of choice. And so what we have here in this world is we have people who choose to walk according to the instructions of God, live their lives by those instructions. And we have people who choose not to walk according to the instructions of God, who choose not to acknowledge God or to walk by the instructions that he's given to the one group of people here on earth. So we have a division here. And we see when we read through the book of Exodus, when God started dealing with Pharaoh, God said that he would harden Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh's heart would not have been hardened by God if Pharaoh had chosen to humble himself and acknowledge that God is God and Pharaoh is a mere instrument of God. And as long as he feared God and did or lived his life as best he could by the instructions of God, none of this would ever have taken place between the children going into Egypt and God having to bring Israel out of Egypt. And keep in mind, when it comes to this, Israel and his family voluntarily left the land of Canaan and went into Egypt. It was not forced upon them. They weren't taken there in chains. And while they were there under the rule of Joseph, they were very well treated. Joseph saw to it that they had food, they ate, they had dwelling places to live in, and everything they did helped support their family. And besides that, Pharaoh himself instructed Joseph to give them the choicest part of the land in Egypt. So they were living in the most fertile place, the most fertile valleys, taking care of their herds, and they were living in comfort, at least for a total of 73 years, because Joseph was 30 years old when he became second in command, and 7 years later, his family was brought over from Canaan to live in the land. And for the remainder of that 73 years that Joseph was in charge of all of Egypt, his family, his brothers, his siblings, his nieces, his nephews, his sister-in-laws, all of them lived in comfort and in peace. And then we have a Pharaoh who, after Joseph died, and after all of Joseph's siblings died, and their wives died, the generation after that, it appears that Amram was the son of Levi that was born in Egypt. And from Amram, Moses and Aaron were also born in Egypt. Let's just say that when Amram was born in Egypt is when the persecution began of the Israelite children, of the Hebrew children. We know that Amram lived 133 years. Aaron himself was 83 years old when he and Moses went before Pharaoh to give him the message from God, "Let my people go." So when Amram died, we have 133 years. If we add 83 years to that, this tells us that by the time they came out of Egypt, we're looking at a total not more than 200 and maybe 15 years, because other things could be timeline off. We don't know exactly how long after they went to Pharaoh to say, "Let my people go," that he actually released them. But we do know that God worked all kinds of miracles and signs before Pharaoh to get Pharaoh to just think for one moment. You're dealing with God here, your creator. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. So what are some of the signs and plagues that God performed against Pharaoh to show Pharaoh that there is a difference between the God of heaven and Pharaoh himself, who thinks that he's a God? We see, first of all, there were snakes. Moses laid a rod down on the ground, and Moses' rod turned into a snake. But Pharaoh's magicians laid their rods down on the ground, and their rods also turned into snakes. However, Moses' rod swallowed up all of Pharaoh's snakes. Meaning, when Moses picked that snake up again and it turned into a rod, his magicians had no rods. So God basically took their weapon out of their hands. The next thing we see is that God had Moses take the rod and put the tip of it into the river that supplied all the drinking water for all of Egypt. And the river immediately turned into blood. Not only did the river turn into blood, all of the vessels that they had gathered their water in that morning, or perhaps the night before. Now these vessels are sitting around in people's homes. They've already gone out, and they've collected their water, the morning part of the day anyway. And before they could even get to the water in the vessels turned into blood throughout the land of Egypt. But this did not happen in the land of Goshen. Then the next thing we see are frogs. The frogs were so numerous that they were in their kneading bowls, everything. The frogs were in everything, in their beds. Frogs were hopping all over the place. You can imagine they were hopping on their chest. They were jumping on their heads. Wherever you could walk, you had to battle through frogs. Whatever you touch, you had to battle through frogs. Then the next thing we see, God turned the dust into lice. Anybody who's ever walked on roads of dirt with sandals on their feet, as your foot hits the ground, the dust floats up in the air and settles back down on your feet. It settles on your clothes. Depending on how dusty the road is, you have dust everywhere. And when we look at this, the dust turned into lice, crawling bugs, insects, parasites that eat your flesh, that bore into your skin and suck your blood. And they were covered in lice. But yet that was not enough for Pharaoh to think, ooh, something is going on here. But he still would not let God's people go. Then the next thing we see is swarms. It says in the Bible that I'm reading between the King James Version and the New King James Version, but it says here that they were swarms. Those swarms could have been swarms of anything. One Bible says flies and the other just says swarms. The older version just says swarms. So I'm thinking they could have been a mixture of swarms. There could have been swarms of flies, swarms of bees, swarms of any insect that flies, that has wings. Can you imagine having so much flies coming at you or bees coming at you that you can't even lay down in peace? You can't sit in peace. You can't walk in peace. There's nowhere that you can go where these swarms of insects are not attacking you. And not only are they attacking you, they're also attacking your cattle, your livestock, your animals. Imagine lice jumping onto your favorite pet. Your pet follows you into the house, and everybody in the house is infected with lice from the tip of their head to the heel of their foot. Lice in everything, because our bodies have spores of hair coming out of them. Our flesh is designed with little pores of hair that grows on us. So that means you had pubic lice, you had head lice, you had lice under your armpit. Lice everywhere, flies, insects, constantly attacking you everywhere. I hate to sit anywhere and have a fly land on my flesh. It's a pestilence. It's annoying. Just the feeling of flies and the sound of them as well, or of bees, or anything, any small insect that's constantly in your face, around your head. Then we have, God says to Moses that he is going to make a distinction, a separation between the livestock of Goshen and the livestock of Egypt. When we look at Exodus chapter 11, beginning at verse 4, and Moses said, thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn of the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on the throne, unto the firstborn of his maidservant that is behind the mill, and the firstborn of all the beasts in Egypt. And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there was none like it, nor shall be like it any more. But against the children of Israel shall not a dog move his tongue, against man or beast, that you may know that the Lord does put a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And all these thy servants shall come down unto me and bow down themselves unto me, saying, Get thee out, and all the people that follow you. After that you will go out. And he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. And the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So God sends Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh and tells him before it happens that his plan is to destroy the firstborn of all of Egypt. But in Goshen, not even a dog is going to be affected by this death. And instead, what does Pharaoh say? He tells Moses to get out of his presence because he doesn't believe that God has the power to do anything that God says that he is capable of doing. And it happens that God does indeed destroy the firstborn of Pharaoh and all his household and every household in Egypt, from the firstborn of the cattle to the firstborn of the pets to the firstborn of every human family. There was not a house that did not have a death in it. And indeed, Pharaoh and his household woke up in the middle of the night, and there was such a cry that it could be heard all the way to the land of Goshen. Next, we see that God comes and he hardens Pharaoh's heart one final time, because when the people gather to leave Egypt, God takes them out by a pillar of cloud during the day, and at night, that pillar of cloud turns into a pillar of fire to give them light. Of course, they didn't have street lights and cars or anything like that back during that time. Everything was done at night, either by candlelight or in darkness. And so God leads them by night by a pillar of fire. And then he hardens Pharaoh's heart, and Pharaoh decides to go after them. He thinks, what in the world have we done? We have let all of our labor force go, because among the plagues that took place were also the locusts that came into Egypt and ate up everything, all of the green grass, all of the green leaves. The vegetables were destroyed. The trees were destroyed. They had no economy left. And now the labor force that they could have used to replant everything, he had let go. So he decides that he's going to go after them and bring them back, or he's going to kill every single one of them. So he pursues them. And what happens? We see as we continue to read that when Pharaoh approached them, it was late afternoon. The sun had not gone down yet. But the pillar of cloud that had been leading the Israelites out of Egypt suddenly moved from being in front of them to being behind them. And as the sun set, the pillar of cloud remained facing Pharaoh's army, and it became complete darkness to them. And the pillar of fire faced the Israelites from behind. It's like someone is following behind you holding a lantern of light, so that that light was so bright that even the children that were not in the back of the camp, those who were at the front, could also see the bright light, and they traveled through the bright light. And Pharaoh and his army, who were in complete darkness with the pillar of cloud standing behind them because they could see absolutely nothing. They couldn't see the children of Israel moving because it was so dark. They were surrounded by darkness, and that's the way it stayed all through the night until the children got to the Sea of Reeds, where God opened the sea, and they crossed on dry land, and the pillar of darkness left Pharaoh's army. And by the time they could see and catch up with the children of Israel, they themselves were trying to cross this dry land where water was on both sides of the sea. And God let the water come down on them and drowned Pharaoh and the entire army in the sea. And later, the children of Israel witnessed the drowned bodies washing up on shore of the sea. In Exodus chapter 19, we see beginning at verse 3, and God went up to Moses, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all peoples on the earth, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall tell and speak to the children of Israel." So Moses came and called for the elders of the children and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. Then all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever." So Moses told the words of the Lord to the people. So we see here, God brings them to Mount Sinai. He called Moses up and he tell Moses what to say to the people. He gives them a marriage proposal because he said, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." And what did the people respond to say to God? "Yes, I accept your proposal. I accept your covenant. All that you say, we will do." And Moses took the answer back to God. Then God says to Moses in verse 10, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day, the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. You shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, 'Take heed to yourselves, that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death.'" So God gives them a warning. He is a holy God. He tells Moses to basically set a border around the mountain, at the base of the mountain, and warn the people not to come beyond that border, because if they do, they're going to be put to death because they're not a holy people yet. They're still in sin. I'm reading at verse 16. "Then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by voice. Then the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain. And Moses went up. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go down and warn the people, lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish." So we see already that God has warned Moses again to make sure they don't break through, because the people were amazed. You hear this loud trumpet sounding, a shofar blast, basically, is what you're hearing. The mountain is smoking, and Moses says something to God, and they heard the voice of God respond to Moses. They were terrified. And as you continue to read, God speaks all these words in chapter 20. He gives them the first basis of the instructions that they are to follow. He says, "I'm the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make graven images to worship them on the earth, beneath the earth, or in the heavens. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. And you shall not covet." Now, these are 10 commandments that he gave them. These are the basics of the commandments that they're to live by. How did the people respond? In verse 19, "Then they said to Moses, 'You speak with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die.' And Moses said to the people, 'Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin.' So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was." God dwells in darkness to the people. We can't see him, but he can certainly see us. He sees us, he hears us, he knows every little thing we do. And this is just not for his people, but for all people. The difference is, if you call yourself a child of God, he's watching you even more. Because you, of all people, are a member of the family. You're a member of the household. And all the things that you do are things in your heart you know you should not be doing against God. So when we take all of this information and we compare it to what we're dealing with today, is it not true that the leaders of this world that we are now living in, they consider themselves all-powerful? For them, they see themselves as gods, because otherwise they would not be passing laws saying, "Sunday will be your day of rest. Forget about Sabbath." We will not hear from another nation saying, "Oh, because you cannot prove that you are born Israeli from your mother's side of the family, then the punishment for you for keeping Sabbath is death through the Noahide laws." We will not see injustice because of the color of your skin or the fact that your parents were brought here in slave ships, never had citizenship, and they worked from the cradle to the grave to make many billionaires and trillionaires today. But yet, they refuse to humble themselves before God and do the right thing by his people, by God's people, to let them go. So ultimately, the battle becomes God's. Ultimately, God will have the final say. So what does it mean for us as his people? We are to remember that our ancestors went into a covenant with him. We are to seek out his instructions for our lives. And when we seek those instructions, we are to seek not just our Bibles from Genesis to Revelation. We are also to seek truth. And if that requires going through and searching out historical documents and history to put it all together, to connect the pieces of the puzzle, to connect the dots, to find out what is true, regardless of whether we like it or not. We are to apply the truth in our lives. Not just apply it in our lives, we are to shout the truth to the mountaintop. For all who will hear, whether you're born of Israel or not. Because those who are not born of Israel, millions upon millions of them have a desire to worship the true living God. And God has set his instructions out there for all of mankind. So if you want to become a part of God's nation, you are to follow the truth. Speak up about the truth. Search out the truth and reveal the truth. Because God is a God about justice, righteousness, truthfulness. And what do we get in return? We get his covering for us. If God can fight a Pharaoh, open up the sea to let his people through and give them a pass, and he shields the waters off of them. He brings them out of a land that they have been continuously pressed for at least 200 years. Our ancestors were oppressed for at least 200 years. And of course, they weren't oppressed for 400 years in the land of Egypt. The numbers just does not add up when you take the time that Joseph served as Pharaoh, and the fact that all his brothers and that generation served in peace and quiet, they were taken care of, that was not slavery. And the ones who were born into the land for a short period of time, from 133 years up to possibly 213 years, does not add up to 400 years. And they were not taken there in slave ships. They were not taken there in irons. So what took place in Egypt with our ancestors does not match to what God said would take place in the book of Deuteronomy and the promise that he gave Abraham about his children being in captivity for 400 years and they would be oppressed and afflicted. And he would later deal with that nation. You read about that in chapter 15 of Genesis, beginning at verse 13. At the end of the day, whether we agree to the covenant or not, if you agree to the covenant, God requires us to be a priesthood, and he will fight our battles for us. And my experience has been, there is nothing as sweet as God fighting your battles for you. And that is because God knows all. He knows all the hidden secret things that we don't know. He knows all the traps that man has set for us to fall into. He knows all of their schemes, how they sit in their dark rooms and work together to come up with plans to dig ditches for us to fall into in order for them to gain and in order for us to lose. God knows it all. There is absolutely nothing hidden from him. And these are the things that we are to keep in mind when we ask the question, what does it mean to be a child of God, to be Hebrew Israelite? What does it mean? It means that we are to honor the covenant, start living our lives according to the instructions he's given us. Deal in truth with everybody, no matter who they are. Treat people the way we would like people to treat us. Do the right thing by them. And when it comes time for somebody who's abusing you and using you and putting stumbling blocks in your way, pray for them. God will deal with them. These are the things that we are to remember. Not only are we to remember them and apply them in our lives, they are also the things that we are to teach our children and our loved ones. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're coming into this for the first time, we all come in with baggage once we find out who we truly are. We've chosen spouses. We've probably gone through divorces. We've done all kinds of things that are against God, and we didn't realize the mistakes that we were making against God. And as a result of that, we think that God could never forgive us for the things that we've done. I will say to you, if you're in an abusive marriage, don't stay in an abusive marriage, because God is not going to hold you accountable for leaving an abusive situation. You ask God for forgiveness, God looks at the situation and he judges it, and that is between you and God. My recommendation is to never stay an abusive marriage that is physically violent towards you or towards your children. Seek help for yourself and your loved ones, if that's what it comes down to. Forgive yourself, ask God to forgive you, and move on in your life. And the rest, put in God's hands. We are living in the last days. The Messiah is soon to return. He's coming back for a people who are doing the instructions of God. So it behooves you to open up the Bible and start finding out what those instructions are. God is not a God of contradiction. He doesn't tell you one thing to do and make it impossible for you to do it. So that means that you have to think about your life and make the choices for yourself as to keeping his instructions. Making the decisions to keep God's instructions isn't going to be a cakewalk, and living them out is certainly not easy when you're living in a world that is bucking against everything that you try to do when it comes to living for God. When the Messiah returns, for those of us who are still living, the only ones who are going to make it into his kingdom and be a part of that kingdom are going to be those who are doing the will of his Father. And that is what we see when we read the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Romans, Acts, all of them. May God be with you as you take the time to seek out his truths and search for him as if you are searching for fine gold, and make decisions for your life to live according to his instructions.